Definitely good.
There it is.
I'm losing stuff. I'm losing stuff.
What's up, everybody? This is Sammy from the Wily Ones, and you're listening to Comic Pop Library.
And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup, or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Comic Pop License to Read, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Jonathan
and Logan.
And in today's episode, we are going to be looking at the novel No Room in Hell, The Good, the Bad, and the Undead, Volume 1, written by William Schlichter. And this is published by ZD Publishing, and it just came out this last February in 2016. When the dead walk the earth, everyone has an agenda. St. Louis detective Marcus Denzinger seeks clues to his daughter's pre-apocalyptic murder by a serial killer. Excused from the case, Denzinger returns to his precinct after the zombie outbreak with only one goal on his mind: to retrieve the evidence to destroy the killer before the entire city falls to the undead and the murderer escapes to the safety of Fort Leonard Wood. In a world where the rules no longer apply, Denzinger won't allow the living or the dead to stop him. And that's just part of the book, to be honest, folks.
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't know why they had
that gets the least attention.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm saying. I don't know why they had that on the back of the book, because Danziger was not the main character in this book.
The thing is,
well, they had.
I'm pretty sure that's more if you read the series description that was, because pretty much all the setup is going to, yeah, that guy's going to be a major villain next book.
True, but I think they put that on the book because they needed a name.
And that's
with
true,
the
too. Right.
Lead protagonist, that he's not really a hero. He's not really a villain. He's just surviving, just like any zombie apocalyptic type story. They don't give him a name to the very end of the book, which is one of the hooks of the book. And that's hard to describe in a blurb for the back of a book.
Yeah.
Right.
Though he is fairly heroic based.
He is. And
he's self-centered.
He has his own. He's like the Punisher. He has his own set of morals and codes.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly what he does. No. And I don't know his name, so I'm gonna.
We're not gonna say, because sure, that is one of the hooks of the book,
right?
And that's not given until like the very second to the last or last chapter, and then you find out his name.
Like I said, I don't. I read the first 100 pages of the book. Liked it. I do want to finish it. So that's why I was like, I don't need to know his name right now.
Oh, no. Well, this one is one where I call it a men's adventure book. Just of men's adventures books. You think of the Edge Western series, or the Mac Bolan military adventure series, or something of that nature. Remo Williams, The Destroyer.
Don't know who that is.
They all have a male fantasy-esque worldview,
right,
where the females need to be rescued and are a little bit subservient.
Right. And that's kind of what happened at the beginning of this book.
Yeah, it comes in real fast.
Yeah, I mean, it comes in real fast, and it comes in real dark.
And
I think that's...
It does have places where it's less, but... They do go back there.
Right. And I think that's what got me into wanting to read more of it to know what's going on, what's going to happen. And like I said, I really don't want to say too much of it, but I mean, it is a dark opening.
Oh, yes. Oh, you almost have to, because the protagonist is introduced in the very first chapter, and he saves a young girl, Emily, and it's a horrific scene. I mean, you think post-apocalyptic, people are going back to their animal base, cruel.
Right, exactly.
Cruelty, and it's...
And it's not even quite animal-based, because they use planning for this.
Yeah.
True. The animals even have... They're better than what this is. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, just the way that he saved her was... I mean, it wasn't dark, but what was happening to these girls when he was saving them was dark.
Yeah. One of them...
I think we probably ought to.
Dead already.
And I think we ought to say what happens in the first chapter, just to give the people a sense, so they're not shocked. What is going on is there's like three.
Okay, that was a bit too high caliber. Let's go to the pistol.
Oh, we don't want to
accidentally. No.
I'm not talking about the gunplay.
We're not talking about the gunplay right now.
Go ahead.
I know. I was doing vague descriptions of the saving itself. That girl's already dead. Sorry, doesn't matter. Okay, kill him anyways, because, but she's dead, no saving her. Well, that one, that might have been too high of caliber. Let's go to the pistols for trying to save this one.
Yeah, there's the violence end of it.
Yeah.
I agree, but the violence I'm talking about is with the women.
Right. Yeah.
And throughout the book, there are some other scenes similar to this, not exact, but the sexual encounters are not pleasant.
No.
And the very first one is actually a rape scene.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's
just horrific.
Like, it's like getting slapped in the face.
Like, you go into the book, and it's just like, boom! Whoa!
It's pretty hardcore.
And then, like,
the only ones that aren't horrific completely are the ones that they go, okay, not going to happen, and there's a few reasons why, but let's go ahead and chat anyways.
Right, that's where we said the protagonist has a sense of morals and a code.
Yeah, with the guard in the army place too.
I've got to be honest with you. I agree with you on the morals of their main protagonist, because in one of the scenes he had this one line that really stood out to me. We do not do this. We do not do this kind of stuff. It is not cool to do this kind of stuff. And then he pretty much castrated a guy, and he said, this is what happens when we do this kind of stuff.
Yep.
And so, I mean, his morals are there, but
they're still pretty tough.
And they're still tough. And I mean, like, you've got to have that kind of moral to do what he did to that guy.
And you can't back down.
And I mean, you can't really back down. You can't show weakness, because if you do, then they're going to be like, oh, well, this guy got away with doing what he did. Now we can get away with it. If he wouldn't have done what he did to show a lesson, and before he actually gave the guy the benefit of the doubt, he was like, did you do this? And he goes, no. Okay, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's see what they have to say. Let's talk to these doctors and see what they have to say. And the doctors ended up saying, well, yes, there are signs of this happening.
Forcible, being forced.
So he's like, okay, this cannot happen in my camp, and I will not let this happen in that camp. And this is what's going to happen when it happens in my camp.
And he says, come here, Peter. You're going for a trip.
So,
and then afterwards, they get sent to the line to just, you get to be out here protecting this section of it, and we send food out for you.
Or
was that a separate punishment?
That was separate. They could go out to the fence, but he also had a group of people that he banned that didn't want to go to the fence. And he put them kind of like just over the fence, and they kind of, like you were saying, they kind of protected the fence line, but nobody knew about him except him. and the second in command. What's his name?
The Indian dude.
Hold on.
I can't think of his name at the moment. I know he's Indian.
Right. I could have swore I wrote that down. Cade, Lieutenant Brown, Marcus, Muntz, Denzinger, zombies. I can't believe I did not write that down. I apologize, everybody.
I apologize who, if I remember correctly, was the good chef.
What?
He was the guy who also
Yeah, he was a chef, yes. I got you now. Yeah, he was a chef, yes.
All I remember about him is that he was a, I think they said he was like 6 foot six Indian or something like that.
Yeah, and I can't remember the tribe or anything. And
I'm not sure if they said tribe.
Maybe they didn't, but man, I thought I had that written down. I have to cut out a bunch of this.
Well,
out.
He mentioned that it was probably a name he assumed after the end anyway, so close enough.
Where was that? The people outside. The group outside of the fences, he knew about and his second in command knew about, but nobody else did. He kind of kept them out there because he knew they were out there. He knew what they were doing. He didn't have to worry about them. It's kind of like keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Yeah, exactly.
Type of deal. Yeah. So that's why I did that.
Keep your enemies close, your friends closest.
Right. But like we said, that he has his own set of morals. And he also proves his own set of morals with Emily. Because when he first rescues Emily, she wants to do naughty things with him. And he goes,
No,
that's not going to happen. You are not
in the right mind.
In the right mind. You're not the right age. That's not going to happen.
Though I think that might have been delayed a bit too. Or it happened twice then.
It happened two or three times in the book or something, but he always said no. Like she has feelings for him, but she's so young that he's, you know, he's been without help for so long. He's kind of like, oh my gosh, but no, this isn't right. So he always turns her down.
And there's also some scarring from a previous relationship too, it looked like.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy is never mentioned until the very last couple of chapters, if not the last chapter. He's always talked about Emily's savior or the big guy or guy with a duster.
Yeah.
He's always called something else. He's never given a name until the very end. And then Emily is the girl he saves. But some of the other main characters, just to get them in there, you have Colonel Travis. He's the commander of a refugee camp that's pretty much disappearing. You have the Bolin brothers, who are scavengers, the black market guys. These are the other. And he
actually one of them was in that
the first scene.
Yeah. That we never did actually get to describing it, but yeah, we probably don't want to. So
we pretty much did.
We did.
A violent rape. That's as much as we wanted.
Death rape, yeah.
And the group of brothers are pretty much all the same.
Yeah, they are. They are.
One of them was somewhat saner, but that's probably why they were more dangerous. So yeah.
I really don't. I mean,
he was smarter than the others, but yeah, that's why they made him dangerous.
But he was still, right, I mean, he was still like them.
Yeah.
But he was controlled. He was more controlled than the others, like Logan was saying.
And that's what made them more dangerous.
Yeah, that's true. Because he was running it, the black market and everything. The Detective Danziger, he comes in. He's actually a parallel story that's happening at the same time.
Yeah.
He's got
with that.
Three or four chapters total.
He's got more than that.
I'm pretty sure it maxes out at five.
I don't think so. I think he's got a little bit more stuff in there than
that. No, because
two with his partner, two with the two guys, and that one at the end.
Logan, because this guy kind of this guy is kind of like Suzanne Lambden. He goes from his main character, then he goes to the next character. The next chapter is going to be his main character, and that's what he did throughout this book.
And I don't know how many chapters.
They focused on all the other main characters rather than this guy.
Because
this guy had about five chapters.
He did a chapter with his main protagonist, Colonel Travis.
Right, and it goes back and forth, yes. I don't know if it's five.
Colonel Travis's daughter.
I don't know if it's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I don't know. I don't even know how many chapters are in this book, to be honest with you. But he gets a legitimate showing in this book.
Yeah.
I don't know how many chapters. I have no clue. Could be right. The Danziger character that is mentioned on the back of the cover is a parallel storyline
right
with what's taking place in the book. And it's... One, that his daughter was murdered before all this stuff happened, and the undead is a byproduct of a bioengineered virus, and it was introduced as a weapon, because that was within the book, because I wrote it down when I came across it.
I couldn't remember.
And there's a serial killer that kills his daughter, and he's basically going after the serial killer. And it's him following that serial killer throughout the post-apocalyptic world. And he never meets up with the unnamed hero. I guess that's the best way we can put it. That's the primary character. He never meets up with him in this book. I don't remember him doing that, unless it was at the very, very end. I don't remember them ever meeting up.
I'm pretty sure they don't.
So, and plus, it says it's a volume one, so you pretty much know it's going to be a series. So this is one where I don't know if they're going to keep doing it the parallel and for how long. I don't know until they merge. At some point, you think they would have to.
I think so. I think at one point.
You definitely know they're going to merge.
Yeah.
Most of them already merged.
Yeah, most of them have.
The daughter of the general.
My name's Hannah.
Hannah and the guys have merged. The serial killer and the guys have merged. The serial killer and the cop merged. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Well, eventually, but I don't know how far down the road. It could be the next book. If he's going to do a trilogy, he could accumulate it all into a big bang finish, like they sometimes do. Let's see. I can't remember this character's name. You guys will have to help me out. They have a kid that has autism within the hero's camp. Yeah. And everybody's questioning, why are you putting up with him? He should be killed and got rid of. He's just a waste. But he is autistic in that he can do math in his head, basically. I
can't think of his name.
And I can't even. I forgot to write it down. Given the
measures of who you've got and how much area you've got, you know exactly how many cows you need to have.
Right. And, like, he has, like, these little houses set up.
Yeah, he built a diagram.
And he built a diagram. And what's her name? I can't think of her name at the moment.
He's paid in crowns.
Emily.
Emily?
She asks him why he's kept. And he goes, well, do you see all that stuff there? He does that. And this is the way that we strategize things. Because he has everything memorized in his head. And this is how we keep things strategized because of him. This is why we keep him.
So hopefully, so they don't overstretch their supplies with how many people they have in the camp. Food and whatnot. Water. So that was an interesting twist. I appreciated that. The other thing is that is unknown at this time. Because, like Logan said, they are tying characters together because the Colonel Travis is leaving the camp, basically, and he gets together with this unnamed hero and sends his daughter off with him to the camp.
Yeah, with a payment in very much stuff.
Right, with different supplies. And it's like, who is this unnamed hero? Because he's a crack shot, pretty much. He's tough as nails. So it's like, is he past military? He is injured.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say.
A knee or something?
A leg.
One of his legs?
Yeah, one of his legs is hurt. So, and like, because they emphasize on that so much. Like, he has a limp, he hurt his leg.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it was, I mean, throughout the whole book, they emphasize on that.
Right.
So, and
kind of what Logan said as well, what they used as part of the emphasis for him at the beginning of the podcast, you talked about the different calibers of weapons he was pulling out. He has weapons all over his body, but it's like the...
He was testing out a rifle. He was checking the aim, basically, testing out how this would do in these situations when he came across this girl.
I don't remember that. It's possible, yeah.
And then... Okay, this goes through that guy's head and into her head, so that's not a good thing to use while helping people.
I can't remember all the details of that.
Well, I remember that, but
yeah,
too.
I do remember
accidental double kill.
Yeah. But he said
he didn't mean to kill the girl, though.
Yeah,
it was accidental.
It might have ended up in a mercy killing later anyways, but that was completely accidental.
Yeah, he'll mercifully kill you. But what I was getting at with the different calibers, like you were mentioning at the very beginning, He has different weapons all over his body. He has a big old 357 six-shooter on his hip. But his primary weapon is a 9mm that he keeps on his back that he can get to because the six-shooter is like a distraction.
Yep.
Because everybody's eyes is like, oh my gosh, a big gun. And, then he pulls this out and gets him with the 9mm. But he also, because I don't know if it's because he doesn't have much ammo for the 357, but it's more the intimidation factor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then he comes back with the easier to find ammo with the 9mm. So that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he will put people down in mercy killings. And he does have a little bit of a soft heart because this book is brutal.
Yeah, it is. And it really is.
There's another older gentleman that captures, I don't know how many women, I think three again, and chops off their hands from two of them.
And then the other one has burnt feet.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And he brings them into the group that's going back to his camp, and eventually they all die. The girl's not
the guy that one said.
Yeah, the guys that he kills. Yeah, no biggie.
But at least two of those were semi-suicide things, I think.
Right, but, a couple of them were. And the other one, I can't remember if it was a mercy kill or suicide again, but their psyche was so damaged, they couldn't survive.
Well, and I know.
Actually, I'm thinking at least one or two of those was, okay, we will literally be much too much of a strain on you, and that is bad. Don't worry about us. We'll be going over this cliff now. Type killing.
I see. Their psyche was so damaged they thought that.
Yeah. Because didn't one of them actually make it through that trip?
One of them made it through, but because the other two were gone, she thought she didn't have anything to live for anymore.
Right.
Because she didn't have them to take care of. And I think she took her own life, too. I can't remember.
Well, see, yeah, I know one fact of what
they could have been doing whenever they got back that I was imagining one of them got through, so not sure. That's true.
I know one fact of a suicide, and that was at the farmhouse. And it was with the girl and the guy, and the old lady takes a gun. They catch the girl and the guy in the bed together, and the old lady takes the gun and shoots the guy in the head, and then the unknown hero kind of tackles her or something. I don't remember what he did to stop her from shooting the girl, but he rescues the girl. And this is one thing that I know. He does not trust people very much.
Oh, no.
Because he took a zip tie and tied that girl. And Emily's like, why are you doing this? When I was getting raped, you didn't do this to me. Why are you doing this to her? And he turns around and tells her something. I don't remember what he tells her. But Emily kind of feels sorry for the girl, and she throws a knife to the girl, and the girl ends up cutting the ship ties and running outside. And the zombies are outside, and she gets eaten by the zombies.
Jump.
Yeah.
So,
that is true.
I kind of consider that kind of a suicide, but I also kind of consider that as an attempted escape.
Yeah, she was trying to get away, but yeah, I can see it either way too. Yeah, true. But yeah, it's one of those that it's a very brutal book.
Because she did bother to get a gun from them too.
She did. She did do that.
Yeah, so that's more an attempted escape than a suicide.
It could have been both ways. She was still trying to get away, but I mean,
she didn't have anywhere to go, really.
Really, no.
And this is one. Scratch that. I think we pretty much about said it all, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. As much as we want to give away,
there's also a Christian-ish group that has sprung out of this post-apocalyptic wasteland type thing,
mm-hmm.
who are a bit on the loose side with logic, because they literally believe that the only ones who the zombies go after are the sinners.
Right.
They don't believe themselves valid targets for zombies. They just, if the zombies show up at their doorstep, for instance, in the farmhouse, they automatically assume it's these guys that showed up first that brought them there.
Right. Because they turned their guns on the unknown stranger and Emily, they turned their weapons on them.
Yes, they did. Yep.
That's kind of the unfortunate side of the human nature, too, is when you want your beliefs, but sometimes your beliefs overtake, like you said, your logical aspect of what human nature is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's their coping mechanism, I guess.
Right. And, yeah, you know, it
probably helps that the farmhouse had apparently been enough out of the way that the zombies had ignored it for
quite a while. True. Yeah. That is true.
Oh, and see, and the funny thing is, as they first welcomed Emily and the guy into the house, and then once the zombies came, they kind of turned on them.
Yeah.
And I can see where that's coming from a little bit.
And I can see that happening, though, in a apocalyptic world, post-apocalyptic, whatever you want to call it, zombie world. Because, like I said, people are going to cling on to anything they can, but, and not to get religious, I apologize to everybody out there, but you would think that, you know, Christians are always taught we're all sinners, but here in this, their mindset, like Logan was saying,
they don't consider
they're not them sinners. So
they think that they won't have zombies after their blood or flesh because they haven't.
So basically, they think their shit don't stink.
Yeah,
pretty much. To a degree, yep. And they also show up at the camp later on in another scene where, you know, they're wanting to get into the camp, and at the camp they have strict rules, and one of them is it don't matter who you are,
strip search.
Yeah,
yep.
And are you bitten? And it's nothing sexual.
No, not at all.
About it at all. It's just a purely survival, again, a survival tactic. And you basically, you know, even the leader, the unnamed hero, I mean, he
strips down too.
And they don't separate the men and women.
No, they don't. Much,
they have like a, they have the gate, then they have an inner barrier where there's another gate. And they stop them in between those gates and say, strap.
Mm-hmm.
You won't get any further until you're stripped or you get back or you get killed.
Yep.
Those are your choices. So,
like, and I cannot remember the name of those, so never mind. Airlock.
Yeah, kind of like an airlock. Yeah. That's
except for there's another word for them in that one, like clean room or something.
Clean room's another type of deal for it, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. You're basically the same concept.
Someone in Allegiant, too.
Yeah, there's some in Allegiant.
Except for that was the weird, creepy shower that was not a shower and weird scene. Which basically is exactly the same way.
Yeah, what was it? A teardrop of mucus, basically? Then they kind of choked until they dissolved?
Yeah.
It was weird. Have you seen Allegiant?
Not yet.
That's a weird shower system they got.
It's on my list.
Oh, different indeed.
To be fair, there was high chance of radioactive random stuff going on there, so.
True. But, like I said, the system he has in place is to protect the community. And the community, just one other aspect of the community before we leave out, is you have to do a job to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get a free ride.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. So if you're either guarding, cooking, digging ditches, you know, not ditches, but farming type stuff, or building fences.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then of all things, I don't know if you're there yet, Jonathan, but Emily is put in charge of
the library.
Oh.
And then she's like, I should be out doing something more and more. And he looks at her and is like, what do these people need? And what's in that library? A distraction from what's going on out here.
Mm-hmm.
So they have books. I think they even had DVDs because somehow they still have power.
Yeah, the dam.
Because they have the dam that does the hydroelectricity for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they can actually watch movies. They can slip in the season of X-Files and, hey.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
They might not be getting any new ones, but they can have reruns.
So they have it better than the camp, actually.
Yeah.
But this is one.
I wanted to say something. This is one that does not really. Technology does not have a good basis on this one, because Emily is always wanting to go back to her phone, and her unknown hero is always teasing her about that. This is not really a technology based book.
They're pretty much back to the Stone Age in essence. Like I said, they do have the hydroelectric plant at the
They got licensed.
Heroes camp, yeah. Compound, whatever.
But his main goal is, will this give me a hot shower?
Yeah. Yeah, he just wants a hot shower. That's what he wanted it for.
That is his priority.
Yep, it is.
And he's got some morals, but that.
That was his main one, priority. To get the electricity. Again, we mentioned this at the very beginning and throughout, but again, another warning. This is a very brutal book.
Mm-hmm.
For smaller libraries, this is going to be a tough sell. Yeah. I'm afraid it just is. Once people read it, they're going to like, oh my gosh. If you have readers within your community that might enjoy it, you might be able to put it within a smaller library's collection. Otherwise, you probably would want to do interlibrary loan.
Yeah.
Medium size, look at your patrons, see what they're interested in. Larger libraries, yes, we'll be able to slip this into the collection. No big deal, because you have your executioners, your edge books, your what all those adult Western books that are out there. I can't remember all of them now off the top of my head, but it's something similar to them. It's, you know, they have their sex scenes in them. This one's, they have their violence in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it is definitely geared for the male fantasy-esque atmosphere. So if you're interested, you can pick this up off of Amazon. Not a problem there. You can probably pretty much find him on Facebook if you want to check him out there. He is on another website, BHC. That's B as in boy, H in hotel, C as in Charlie, authors. So it's bhcauthors.com. And this is a coalition of authors, like Logan said, while we were looking it up, of a bunch of different authors that have gotten together and put their short bios of all of them on that page. So you can go to his name and click on it and get his bio. But again, you can get this from Amazon, not a problem. And if you go to Facebook and look him up, you could probably find him and get in touch with him there, and he'd probably hook you up somehow or tell you how to get hooked up. And not in that sense, but in getting a book.
Yes.
So clarify that, since we've been talking about things tonight.
And that is what I meant when I was saying that could be about anything even vaguely addictive.
True. True.
And or bad relationships.
Yep. Gotcha. Interpretation. If anybody's interested in getting in touch with us, you can contact us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. We have a Facebook and Twitter account under Comic Pop Library. You can get in touch with us there. We have Justin Barron. He got back in touch with us. He's another artist that we looked at through Black Panda PR, and he just really wanted to say, hey, thanks, dudes. Really appreciate the write-up. We spotlighted one of his songs on the webpage, so we appreciate the feedback and getting back in touch with us, Justin. We're glad to help you out there. And like I said, if you want to get in touch with us, go to admin@comicpoplibrary or Facebook and Twitter. You can also find us on iTunes. Look us up there. You can download us there and subscribe. Leave us some feedback if you'd like. Also, Jonathan's out there on YouTube and Facebook with the Jonathan's Room. So that is JONATHON. That's how he pronounces it.
That's how he spells it.
Yeah, that's how he spells his name. So check out his solo project out there on YouTube or on Facebook. That'll get you links back to that. Again, we appreciate... Let me grab this. Golly, I can't talk now. It's time to go home, folks. We want to thank William Schlichter again for sending us his No Room in Hell novel, The Good, the Bad, and the Undead, that just came out this last February of 2016 from ZD Publishing. Be sure to go to Amazon, check it out. If you're into the zombie horror genre, you'll probably dig this one. Like I said, it's pretty brutal, men's adventure type stuff. So if you're into that, I didn't mind it. I enjoyed it, and I think pretty much once you get into it, it's kind of hard to rip away. It's one of those where it's just like, oh my gosh. So
there was a bit near the camp area I was going, okay, am I going to go, this is good or no? Because if the army knew the extent of the black market thing going on, that's a no. But it sounded like they at least were hiding the majority of their stuff from the officials. So, yeah.
True.
I was cool with it.
Yep. We enjoyed it, so thank you, William, again. We're going to see if maybe we can get him on and talk a little bit about this and see what maybe if he'll give us some spillage on his next volume of what he might be doing or any other works that he's working on. So hopefully in the future we'll get him on the podcast. Nice. That's going to do it for us this time, everybody. We hope everybody out there has enjoyed listening to us. We've been having fun. Hope you've been having fun as well. We'll see you on the flip side. Bye. Bye.
See ya. I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's so.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.